Highlight this last candle for all the joys and sorrows that remain in the silence of our hearts.
Good morning. My story for you today also has a green cover, like the children's story did. And this will be one of it's a series. It's a couple of series that are broken up. This is part of two series. I'll be doing a series on Islam with relation to Islam. I don't want to say on Islam. The next one will be inspired by an article that Emmy shared with us a couple of months ago. Very, very good New Yorker article. But today I'm doing a sermon called Cartoon Wars on April 2nd, the day after April Fool's Day. So to introduce it, here are some sayings of Jesus that you might not have heard. Jesus met John the Baptist and said to him, "Admonish me so that I might become a better person." John said, "Avoid feeling anger." Jesus said, "This I cannot do." John said, "Do not own any." So, what can I do? What can I do? And John said, "Do not own any wealth." Jesus replied, "As for this, it is possible. It is possible." Here's another saying. Jesus was asked, "How can you walk on water?" He replied, "Through certainty of faith." The people protested, "We too have certain faith." And Jesus asked, "Do you believe that stones, mud, and gold are all equal in your sight?" "No," they replied. He said, "They are all the same in my sight." And the third saying, these are all reported by a man named Ahmad ibn Hanbal. A man came to Jesus and said, "Teacher of goodness, teach me something that you know and I do not, that benefits me and does you no harm." Jesus asked, "What would that be?" The man said, "How can a servant be truly pious before God?" Jesus replied, "The matter is easy. You must truly love God in your heart and work in his service, exerting all your effort and strength, and be merciful toward the people of your race as you show mercy to yourself." He said, "Teacher of goodness, who are the people of my race?" Jesus replied, "All the children of Adam. And that which you would not wish done to you, do not do to others. In this way, you will be truly pious before God." These readings are from a book called The Muslim Jesus. That might sound like an April Fool's Day joke, but I'm not kidding. Some April music, Deborah? Thank you. Thank you. That sounded like rain. Very April, but a rain that gives you strength, not a rain that wears you down. You know? Ready for some of that kind of rain. Well, you've all heard about the cartoon that started it all a few years back. I mean the one depicting the Prophet Muhammad with a bomb in his turban, fuse lit, ready to explode. And you've heard about the explosion that followed its first publication in a Danish newspaper. Though it was reprinted in other European countries, most U.S. newspapers decided not to run the cartoons, while also decrying how certain Muslims seem so prone to violence when they're upset. They just don't understand freedom of discourse, in which nothing is sacred except perhaps that freedom itself, expressed so eloquently in the U.S. Constitution's First Amendment. However, few, if any, Muslim-majority countries today have anything like a First Amendment or anything like a truly free press. That's true of most post-colonial nations, whether Muslim or not, and really of most nations. That is a pretty special thing, that First Amendment. So what most newspapers print in most countries, including the cartoons, does represent the policy of the central government or the ruling party. Asking people to accept that those original cartoons were not an expression of Danish government opinion is to call for quite a mental leap. It's okay to ask such a leap of people from time to time, but then we should also expect that sometimes the same sort of leap will be asked of us. When the Muhammad cartoon first appeared, conservative columnists were quick to chide the liberal press for its timidity, and they demanded that it be reprinted everywhere, fully aware that this would lead to renewed protests and inevitably the death of protesters, police, or bystanders. A few years back, one of those columnists had written a piece objecting to a scientific reconstruction of the face of Jesus that showed him with Semitic Mideastern features. Not blonde and blue-eyed like we all know he was. And she was a bit annoyed that he didn't look like James Taylor. We've seen the pictures, right? We've all got a perfectly clear image of Jesus in our heads, don't we? We better, because Easter's coming soon. You may have also read comments by moderate Muslim leaders deploring both the insensitivity of the cartoon and the extreme reactions of a minority of protesters. They pointed out that a widespread, though not universal, prohibition. There is a widespread, though not universal, prohibition of visual images of Islam's prophet, and that this extends to positive images as well, underscoring the fact that worship of Muhammad is forbidden in Islam. Idolatry, they explain, is the cardinal sin for a Muslim. So if positive images of the prophet are seen as a serious problem, they say, please try to understand how much more loaded negative visual images must be, like the one that shows him with a bomb in his turban. If you went and looked up this cartoon on the internet, which you can still do, to see it for yourself, you may have noticed that something that received no mention whatsoever in the Western press. The Arabic words printed on the prophet's turban bomb. What they say is, La ilaha illa Allah, Muhammad Rasulullah. What they mean is, there is no God except God. Muhammad is the messenger of God. What they are called, these words, is the Shahada, the testimony of faith. The prophet said that he brought to his people nothing more important than these words. Nothing. Say them and mean them, and you become a Muslim. Staying true to them is the guiding principle of Muslim life. Well, let's be realistic. Be realistic. Do you think the Danish cartoonist or the newspaper editors had any idea that those words on the turban constitute the central affirmation of Islam, the gateway to its whole spiritual and intellectual culture? Not many people outside of Islam know very much about it, not even the most basic things. But is that enough to satisfy you? Are you really content to just let police or soldiers handle upset Muslims when they become a problem? I don't believe that. Not about you. Very few of us would demand that our newspapers publish cartoons of little black Sambo or Native Americans in feathered headdresses. No, we would rise up in outraged protest. Yet we accept and even expect a caricaturing of Muslim people that we would never accept if the subjects were Chinese or Japanese or Hasidic Jews. One picture is worth a thousand words, we say. Cartoons fuse language and image in a way that's all their own. Pictures amplifying the force of words much more than a thousand times. They're difficult to forget or ignore. So imagine this one. I can't draw. Maybe I would have tried to draw it myself. Jesus is up on the cross, nails in his hands and feet as usual. But instead of that usual loinclothy thing he usually wears, He's wearing some strappy SM gear. Do I have to translate SM? Right. No, I guess not. Black leather, metal studs. He's also wearing a big smile and is clearly enjoying himself. A sign nailed to the cross just above his head reads, "That's the way, I like it." Can you imagine the storm that even a description of such an image in a newspaper, on a news channel, would provoke? For most Christians, Jesus crucified is the way and the life, the gateway to the resurrection, which is the central affirmation of their faith, like the Shahada is for Muslims. Did you know that the editor of the Danish paper that published the Muhammad cartoons, what was that, 2005? Had rejected some earlier ones that poked fun at Jesus and the resurrection? He said, these are his words, "I don't think our readers will enjoy the drawings. I think they will provoke an outcry. Therefore, I will not use them." Do you think that any reputable daily newspaper, something that just comes to your front door, would publish my SM Jesus cartoon? Do you think that any newspaper in a Muslim country would print it to, quote, get even with the West? If Western papers scorn the Jesus of Islam, so to speak, why not do the same to the man whom most Christians hold so dear? The problem is that the Jesus of Islam is Jesus, not Muhammad. Jesus is the Jesus of Islam. The Quran invokes Jesus' name far more often than it does Muhammad's. Muslims have an image of Jesus that's not unlike the Christian one. They affirm that he was born of a virgin, Mary. There's a whole chapter dedicated to her. They say he never died, but was taken up alive to sit at the right hand of God. Muslims believe, as Christians do, that he was the Messiah promised to Israel. He is the teacher of goodness, for whom stones, mud, and gold were all equal, though he could not contain his anger at injustice and greed and selfishness and cruelty. At the end of the world, Christians expect Jesus to come again. Whom do you think Muslims are expecting? Muhammad, right? No, it's Jesus. He's the one who will return to clean things up like he does at the end of the Bible. Jesus, not Muhammad. So you see that Muslims have an extremely well-developed and positive image of Jesus, Don't expect to see his image used as a weapon in any coming world cartoon war. But what image do most of us who are not Muslim have of the Prophet Muhammad? There's certainly no place for him in Christian religious life like the one that Islam holds for Jesus. Does the, quote, Christian West have any image of Muhammad at all? What do we know about his teachings? Shouldn't we know something about this man who is considered the ideal human being by one out of four of our species? We ask protesters to make a mental leap and imagine the possibility of a truly free press printing cartoons that represent only one individual's free expression, not the will of an authoritarian leader or party. Can we ask such a mental leap of ourselves and get to know Muhammad? Maybe, just maybe, some protesters have been worried that most of us in the West simply have no image whatsoever of the beloved prophet, visual or otherwise. Maybe they fear that cartoons and caricatures will become our only image. And let me be very clear here. By protesters, I mean people who still have hope to reach others and make them understand. That's protest. You still have hope. You want to get your message across. I'm not talking about those who seek only to destroy, no matter what religion they use to justify that. Perhaps such protesters, on some level, are concerned for our well-being, worried that we will suffer terribly for this empty space in our hearts and minds, or for stocking that space with trash. They may be asking in their own way, how can a people live without Muhammad in their hearts? That's a leap. I know it is. Asking you to believe that concern for our spiritual well-being, or compassion, if you will, plays any part in motivating events like those we've seen centered around cartoons. But is this a bigger leap than the one we expect when we ask Muslims in Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere to believe that the countless thousands killed and maimed through Western military action are all the fruits of our compassion? We tell the world that we do it because we care for women's rights, for freedom, for democracy and progress. Isn't this true? If we can ask Muslims to believe that it is, why can we not believe that compassion plays some role when they react to those cartoons? Do some risk and lose their lives because they care for our souls too? We will never know if this is true or not, unless we take a leap and dare to actually learn something about the personalities and the narratives that shape so many people's lives. Never, ever have one people had an opportunity to do so much good for another people, for themselves, and for peace in the world by simply listening, by simply agreeing to hear a story. A story, a story. Let it come, let it go, but hear it. The question is, will we hear it? Will we take the time to listen and learn and form a solid image of our own? One newspaper story on the turban bomb cartoon commented, "No one knows what Muhammad looked like, so any image is likely to be wrong." But in fact, we do have detailed descriptions of his appearance from his contemporaries, like this one. Have you ever heard a description of Muhammad's appearance? One person, yeah. Okay, he was of medium height, and his hair was moderately wavy. He was not overweight, and I guess it means he wasn't a skinny old man, right? But he was not overweight, and his complexion was white tinged with reddishness. He had big black eyes with long lashes. His bones were heavy, and his shoulders broad. He had soft skin with fine hair covering the line from mid-chest to navel. He walked with a firm gait as if striding downhill. And many people reported this peculiar quality that he looked like he was walking downhill, even on level ground. It's like, it sounds like he was a very energetic kind of person. Well, that'll have to do for now, for a physical description. How can we also get an image of how the man is believed to have been on the inside? For that, we also have ample testimony. But I want to focus on one very special narrative. Muhammad was telling his companions about Judgment Day, the day when the virtuous will be rewarded and the wicked will be punished. After the fires of hell have been kindled, the angels and prophets will be given an opportunity to search the flames for some who still might be redeemed. So the prophets, it means Abraham, Moses, Adam, Noah, Jesus, etc. Right? And then the faithful believers themselves from among the peoples of the book, Jews, Christians, and Muslims, will be asked to rescue those who did at least some good in their lives. Time and again, they'll dive into the fire and bring out anyone who's done a nickel's weight of good, then a penny's, and then even the weight of an atom. At last, they'll say, no, we can't find any more. We've got them all. But then, this is Muhammad still talking, God himself will take a handful from the fire and bring out from it people who never did any good and who had been turned to charcoal, and will make them anew like pearls. They'll be remembered after being dismembered. Eh? And then he will say, enter paradise. Whatever you see is yours. But, the last to enter paradise will be a man who has done no good at all, only bad, and was already pretty well charbroiled. So he's still in hell, he's roasting, but suddenly he finds that he's able and willing to drag himself just slightly out of the flames. And here are Muhammad's words. First the man will bless God, and then a tree will be raised up for him, and he will say, oh my Lord, bring me near this tree so I may take shelter in its shade and drink of its water. God, the exalted and great, will say, oh son of Adam, if I grant you this, you'll ask me for something else. The man will say, no, my Lord, and promise God that he won't ask for anything more. But he does, of course, wouldn't you? Come on. Tree by tree, the story continues. Asking God's permission every time, he moves further out of hell. Then a final tree will be raised up for him at the gates of paradise, more beautiful than the others, and the man will say, oh, Lord, bring me near that tree, and I'll ask for nothing else. And God will say, oh, son of Adam, did you not promise that before? He'll say, yes, my Lord, but I swear I won't ask you for anything after this. The Lord will bring him now to the tree at the gate. And there the man will hear the joyful voices within, and he will say, Lord, admit me to the garden. Admit me to the garden. Let me in. At this point, Muhammad broke off telling the story, threw back his head, and laughed until his two front teeth were visible. Oh, I forgot something here. God says, son of Adam, what will bring an end to your request? Will it please you if I give the whole world another like it? And the man will say, Lord, are you mocking me, though you're Lord of the worlds? I forgot to tell you that part. Now Muhammad telling the story. After telling about the laugh, he throws his head back and laughs and laughs. His companion asks, why are you laughing like this? And it's the prophet. What kind of behavior is that? He replied, on account of the laugh of the Lord of the universe, when the man asks, are you mocking me? For then God will say, I'm not mocking you, but I have the power to do whatever I will. And then God will let the man enter paradise. And he will say, ask for this, ask for that. And the man will ask for those things. And when all his requests are granted, God will say, all this is for you, and 10 times as much, then the man will say, no one has been given the like of what I have been given. And then Muhammad laughed again until all his front teeth were visible. Did I hear that story right? Will God open paradise to the worst person who ever lived and then laugh with joy at the extravagance of it all? What, even Hitler? We went through that before. Whole sermon on that. Pol Pot? Osama bin Laden? That's too much. That's going too far. That's going way beyond what the God I would be if I were God would ever do for such people. That's the God that matters, right? The God I would be if I were a God. It's generally the only one people talk about. It's an outrage. It's a scandal. It's a bombshell, you could say, coming right from under the prophet's turban. This bombshell image of a laughing God roaring in mirth at our surprise when the hell in our hearts and minds has exploded and is no more. The strangest joke ever told, and told at no one's expense. It's all this, and 10 times more. And it's the image I'd like to leave you with today. It's just a start. Will you expand on this image, add details, fill it up with more of the stories and sayings of a man who, deep down, one-fourth of humankind may hope that you'll get to know? Never before has there been such a chance for a little learning, a little knowledge to do so much, to put an end to the cartoon wars and, who knows, maybe prevent some real wars too. The opportunity is before us like a tree with its pool of shade in the distance. It remains for us to begin moving towards it. And that's the thing, that man does want to get out. If we do, who can say what help might come so that we can reach it